Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 2021 offers, contact your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850-715-815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. At Joe at RT.ie, this whole debate about people coming home for Christmas, as we heard last week, a lot of people were saying they're not coming and not going to encourage people abroad saying, no, we will not go home. About half saying, yes, we will come home. And now the issue is, if people do come home, will they be welcome in their communities? Will people say, hang on a minute, why are you home for Christmas when the government said it's only essential travel and coming home for Christmas is not essential travel? Veronica O'Brien, you've decided to make the sacrifice. Tell us your story, please, Veronica.
Hi, Joe, it's Veronica here. Joe, I have three children and a granddaughter. And two of my daughters live in Sydney in Australia.
Okay.
And my son lives in New Zealand. So every year, if they're not coming home for Christmas, we go over to them. So this year, none of us are travelling.
And whose turn was it to travel?
We were going to go this year again because my daughter has a little granddaughter now. She's going to be 4 in July. And obviously, she's just after buying a property over there, and obviously it's expensive. So we said we'd go back over again this year. But when we were coming back in January, of course, we came home in January, usually we would book our flights maybe about March or April.
Okay.
You know, we would start booking. But obviously, with what was going on with COVID, we said we wouldn't because Australia's stance and New Zealand's stance is so strict, and there's no nonsense there. We were saying, oh, you know, if we're going to get caught over there, we might be locked down, and then they mightn't allow us in at all. So we decided not to book.
And when did you decide?
We decided not to book in March or April.
Oh, way back.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And are all your children away?
Oh, that's my whole family.
Your three children.
That's my
one
three children.
That's it?
That's it. I have no more children. That's all.
Okay. So what would you say to people? You'd say, don't come home.
Joe, I'm not saying to people, don't come home. I think that's the
Well, that's
the
what
right
the government, that's what the government is saying. Do you agree with the government? Let me put it to you that way, yeah.
I do. I agree. We all have to make sacrifices. Everyone has to. So I can't talk for anyone else. I can only talk for myself and my family. And that was my decision. Now, I would not turn around and judge anyone if they come home. I wouldn't. If my neighbor's family came home, I wouldn't judge or be nasty to them or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think we do have to make sacrifices. And like, as I was saying, it is hard for me. It is extremely hard for me and my husband because we don't have any other children. My mother is 84.
Okay.
And my sister died in the last lockdown, in July. She went into palliative care during lockdown in March and died in July.
Yes.
So, and she's my mother's. My mother only had two daughters, me and Josephine, and that is all her family. So it's very hard for her as well. It's extremely hard for her.
So what will Christmas Day be, Veronica, this year? Insofar, are you one of those people who say, it's just another day, will people get over it?
I'm not going to say people get over it. I'm only going to say what I would.
Yeah.
I would say, look, let's make the most of it. My mother is going to move up with me, which she always did. Now, Joe, I wouldn't be gone over to Australia for Christmas Day. I always spend Christmas Day with my mother. She always moved up
off
with me.
Yeah.
And then on the 28th, my husband Robert and I would head off.
And is your mother allowed to move up with you this year? Is she from the same county?
Oh, she is, yeah.
I'm so lucky.
My mother is only just around the corner from me.
Oh, okay.
So I'm very, very lucky.
So she'll move in for a few days?
She'll move up with me for a few days, and that's it, Joe. It's just going to be quiet. It's going to be one of these quiet ones. We're going to stay in, enjoy it, enjoy the time on our own and make the most of it.
And your family in Australia, Veronica, are they happy? What is their reaction to the decision, or were they party to it?
Their reaction to it, they know that they couldn't come home because Australia won't allow them
back in.
New Zealand back in. I mean, let's face it, Jacinda Ardern is doing a fantastic job over New Zealand, and she's, you know, they're aware that they're going to be staying. My son can't even come to Australia, won't even go to Australia, to my daughters. He will just stay in New Zealand. And Joe, that's the way it is. We know we're all going to be back together again shortly, and that's okay. Going to be a Thanksgiving to us. We'll do a Thanksgiving, we'll do a Christmas, whatever day we can all get back together again. Joe, it's so hard. We have a business here. Mm-hmm. We have people working for us. Yeah. Maybe we're privileged because we're older, but we have guys working for us that have mortgages, young children, big families. You know, well, thank God we're able to stay working. We're the lucky ones. But I mean, it's so hard. Like, it's so hard for the economy, and it's so hard for people.
Will you be affected by Brexit, by the way?
Yes, just slightly. We're an insulation company.
Okay.
And we do get, and our stuff does come over from there. So it will affect us.
But even in your day to life, I don't know whether you read Dan O'Brien, the economist in the Irish Independent at the weekend, but he was saying, well, the way Brexit is going, people should be stockpiling now. They should be stockpiling bread, stockpiling flour, rice, all the basics, because they're going to go up in price on the 1st of January.
You know, Joe, the way I look at that, we have enough stuff here, Irish stuff. Let's all buy Irish. Let's all stick with Irish, and we survive. We've survived the famine. We've survived plenty of things. We're Irish.
But we didn't survive the famine, but a couple of million people didn't.
Yes.
But I take a point.
You know, the way I look at it, I'm not going to panic buying stuff. You know, I think that was a little bit over the top, this panic buying. But look, Joe, I don't know what other people do, but that's what I'm doing this year, and I just hope we see these numbers coming down. I just hope we see these jobs, people getting their jobs back. I actually saw a program yesterday morning, and it was a replay of maybe Nationwide or something, and that there was a girl talking that was making these beautiful wreaths for the door, and her husband and herself, they work at the airport. And, I mean, that's both of them not having a job. Both of them are out of work. She has a young child. She has a mortgage. Oh, my heart goes out to these people. My heart goes out to these people just, you know, that are in those situations. And if it means that our numbers come down, and with the help of January, our bars, our restaurants, everyone can open, I think it's a small sacrifice I'm making.
Well, judging, anyway, there's one member of NEFA today, Dr. Mary Xavier, she's saying, well, if you read what she's saying, basically it is that almost nothing should be open before Christmas. If you listen to Luke O'Neill, he's saying there's more evidence again that pubs, gyms and social gatherings are the main spreader, but pubs are up there as number one. So if a pub is allowed to reopen for a fortnight, will they reopen for a fortnight, or will it be worth a while? And Tommy, 51551, my chance, Joe at rt.ie, 1850715815. Anne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
And you're in Cannes in the south of France.
Oh, yeah. And are you sitting on the terrace in 25 degrees and feeling very lonely and confined. How does that sound?
Well, you tell me. What's it like? Do you come home for Christmas?
I would love to, Joe. I mean, you know, I'm a big traveller, but I'm from Dublin. I have a lovely apartment in Blackrock. I got stuck there for 6 months. Dare I use the word stuck? I had a good time, but I wanted to come back here because I had left my checkbook here, my driving license here. I didn't know I was going to get stuck in Los Angeles and New York and Dublin. So life has just changed drastically for all of us. And I'm very lucky in my mid-70s not to be ill, not to be unhealthy. But I don't see anybody. We're only allowed out for 1 hour a day, 1 kilometre. Now, I have to admit that I have broken some of those rules with attestation from the police. But you must have a document with you to say where you're going, why you're going, what time you left your house. And it's not easy, especially being a foreigner. But the local policeman said to me, you know, Anne, the French bluff and lie. You're a foreigner. Be careful. We've been told to be very careful with foreigners after all the beheadings. I said, excuse me, I'm not a foreigner. I'm European. Wow. And I don't wear a veil. And, you know, it's just different, Joe. And I just think my friends in Dublin, I don't have a big family, have said to me, we don't even know if we'll be able to see you. Are you sure? It's €1,000 one way to get to Dublin Christmas week from Cannes.
Wow. From the south of France.
€1,000. Yeah. Air France and Aer Lingus. €1,000. I'm not going to pay that anyway. That'll change.
Are you tempted to come home to work? Because are we not much safer than France at the minute?
I think we are, but I mean, let's say I come, Joe. Let's say I come. I mean, let's say I come, as usual. I usually come for a month around Christmas, and I have a wonderful time, and I give a wonderful Nollag na Mban lunch. Your ex-colleague Anne Doyle comes, and we have a great time. But I don't have a husband, and I, you know, my friend that I'm friendly with is in New Zealand. He can't get out of New Zealand, but I have wonderful I'll tell you what, Joe. I feel loved in Dublin. I feel liked in Cannes. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So you'd rather stay where you're liked rather than where you're loved?
No, I'd rather be where I'm loved.
Okay.
In Dublin. But
you're not going to make it. On the one hand,
I did book to come in November and it was cancelled. Just for a week. I just wanted to get out of here for a week, and then I did book to come for Christmas, and my flights were cancelled. I must get my money back. I keep forgetting. So the Ryanair and Aer Lingus have closed the route until April. There's no direct flights from Nice to Dublin. You've got to go through Heathrow or Paris, which is also dangerous. You know, I mean, I have somebody who came here this week on an absolutely packed flight with KLM. There were only 4 empty seats from Dublin to Amsterdam, and a packed flight from Amsterdam to Nice. So there's no, this business of the flights only a quarter full is complete and utter
BS. And why are they in Cannes, for business or leisure or necessity?
No. Own a place here.
And they're down now for the duration?
Just for a week. I mean, it's none of my business, and I'm delighted that to see a friendly face, to tell you the truth. But
what's the current situation in France? The bars are closed, the restaurants are closed.
Everything is closed.
Everything.
Except the beach. I swim every day. The markets are open, and I met 6 friends at the market yesterday for a stand-up coffee at a takeout coffee place, but you couldn't sit down. You could only stand up. No liquor, no food, no cinemas, no theatre. Checked by police quite a lot. No, it's okay because the beaches are open and we can still swim. There are very few people here, Joe. I mean, the schools are open. There are very few people here because it's more of a summer. In many ways, it's more of a summer place. And another thing about Cannes is the population who live here are generally a teeny bit older. Do you know what I mean? So they're not kind of swanning around. Oh, we have to be home by 9 o'clock in the evening. But that doesn't matter anymore because the restaurants are not open, the theatres are not open, the clubs are not open, nothing is open. So there's nothing to do in the evening except have maybe a walk before dusk.
And when you say this,
I'm not complaining, Joe.
Okay, I know that. But when you say, well, tell me how it works. You're saying you have to be home by 9. What does that mean? Are you arrested at 9:05?
I haven't tried it. Do you want me to try it?
No. Tell me what happens.
I don't actually know, Joe. I don't actually know. I'll try it one night. I do know a local policeman who now calls me Madame Irlandaise. So I could try it with him and see what happens. I could ask him.
No, but you haven't. Have you read and heard on radio or television? I know there is a curfew at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
But how is it enforced?
The fine is €135.
Okay, well,
for a minimal offence.
That's the start. Okay. Yeah. So what would you
I'm
do?
Not sure
what will you do on Christmas Day? Or what did Christmas Eve is
oh,
bigger
God,
in France?
No, I'm dreading it. I'm dreading it. Now I do have a few very very good acquaintances here. Not many really close friends because I'm always away. And I think there'll be so many of us stuck here. But I hate to use the word stuck, but so many of us not going anywhere for Christmas, we'll probably get it. Christmas is on the 24th of December here. It's not on the 25th.
Christmas Eve.
It's celebrated the
94th. Back to that question at the beginning. If you did come home, and people know you live in most of the year in Cannes, a part of the year in Cannes. Would you be afraid of being checking you? Not, I don't mean physically.
Well, I have a beautiful apartment in Blackrock, opposite Blackrock College.
But if you came back. And you came back to your apartment in Black Rock, and then somebody saw you on the street on Christmas Eve to say, what are you doing home?
Well, the fact of the matter is, Joe, we don't know what the situation is going to be by the 24th of December. Perhaps the vaccine will work. Perhaps it'll be fine. There's some question of only having to isolate for 5 days if you're COVID-free. On next Thursday, there's a COVID testing situation being opened at Dublin Airport. You can take a COVID test at Dublin Airport for a mere 100 euro. My problem, I think, about travelling is, apart from the fact that maybe none of my friends who are very fond of me and keep in touch with me every day, vice versa, may not be able to see me. And I only have one small family group of three in Dublin.
Okay.
So it's not a situation where I have 95,000 relatives who are going to have to be with open arms and say, please come, you know? And I don't think my every Christmas Day meal with my immediate family, which is my niece and nephew, I don't think that they will be able to have me. They have three children and it's already near, and their parents, it's already more than six people, you know?
Okay, stay with us, Anne, for a second. Anthony Staines, as you know, is Professor of Health Systems at DCU School of Nursing. Anthony, you're listening, you say, and you want to commend the people who are not coming home.
Yeah, I think they're taking the right choices, because if people come back from abroad, they will spread the virus further around the country. We were looking at some of the Australian figures this morning with colleagues. And there are cases in Australia, but they're almost all happening in isolation in the quarantine facilities. And they're getting about 10 cases a day. And those people are being stopped from spreading the virus around the country. They're being obviously looked after properly and minded and all of that. But if they were let go into Australia, they would spread the virus. So that's really our future. We're going to need to keep doing that if we want to bring... We want to bring our economy back. If we want to bring our jobs back. I was listening to someone speaking from Izmi earlier today, and there's so many small businesses kind of hanging on by their toenails at this point. Unless we bring this virus down substantially and keep it down, and all of the people who choose not to come home are helping us to do that. And it's a very hard choice.
Well, what about the other hard choice, Anthony? That's... Pubs, for example. Why does it always revolve around pubs now? But anyway, it's the issue. Should pubs and restaurants be allowed open before Christmas, or should we say, well, Christmas is just another day for a lot of people? Obviously, it's a great Christian festival. But should we just say, forget about December 25th as being this ticking clock, and just keep the pubs open as long as the numbers are high?
I think we're going to need to keep the pubs closed until the new year. Wow. If we play our cards right, we could have the country open again by the beginning, including the pubs, including the restaurants, maybe not including the nightclubs, but open again by the end of January. We had a workshop with a group of people from Australia on Wednesday, and there's an economist and public health people on the workshop. And the economist told us that everywhere in Australia, the economy started falling down as soon as the virus broke out. And it didn't start coming back up again till the virus was gone. But it comes up very quickly. So he reckons the Australian economy will be pretty much back to normal by Christmas. And they're all planning their Christmas at the beach with the Barbie. And they're usual things. Their sporting events are on, the races are on.
Well, that Christmas is outdoors, isn't it, obviously?
It is, yeah. It's a very different experience to an Irish Christmas.
But surely the more good news today from Moderna, the Pfizer news about a vaccine, surely as soon as a vaccine starts rolling out, it'll almost be the virus will be stoppable and the vaccine will be unstoppable.
Well, there's two things there. Both of these are vaccine candidates. So neither of them do we have the final results. They both look very promising, which is great. And I really, really hope that one or more will work. But we don't know that yet. But that's not going to happen on the scale we require till probably the end of next summer. We may be in a position to vaccinate healthcare workers in the late winter, very early spring. Perhaps, and I don't know exactly what the plan is, but maybe healthcare workers, people living in nursing homes, people who are on treatment for chemotherapy. Because it's going to take a significant time to get this vaccine out to people. But you know, we could have our economy back well before the vaccine. And it means that if the vaccine doesn't work as well as we hope it does in practice, if there's something we don't know yet about the vaccines.
But the numbers are... Tony Holland's very worried about the numbers. We saw the scenes in the city centre of Dublin and indeed Cork, and God knows what happened elsewhere over the weekend, where large groups and people... I see people tweeting, local councillors in Mount Mary, and I won't give the name of the place, but he said he names a restaurant, and he said there must be at least 150 people there. How is this allowed during level 5 restrictions? Apparently there was 400 or 500 people in South William Street, a very narrow street in Dublin, and the Gardaí said when they received reports, I don't know how they have to receive reports, they're always around South William Street, they went around and spoke to them and they dispersed my eye. Dispersed around the corner and how are you going to keep people from breaking the rules, including at Christmas, given what Christmas means?
I'm not too worried about
Ireland.
People breaking the rules outdoors. I'd prefer they didn't, obviously. But if you're going to do mad stuff, do it outdoors, because the risk is lower. We've had a whole bunch of outbreaks associated with parties in houses, not all by young people by any means. We've had a whole bunch of outbreaks associated with funerals indoors.
Well, then why did the government cave in on funerals? Because the original number on funerals for level 5 was 5 people. And then a few Fianna Fáil backbenchers, they objected because weddings were 25 people. But the reason weddings were 25 people is that weddings, as we know, are few and far between during the lockdown. Whereas funerals, unfortunately... there's even more funerals, unfortunately, than there was this time last year. So why did they back down on funerals?
Well, you'd have to ask the government that. I don't know.
Well, do you think they were right to back down
no,
on funerals?
No, I don't. I think we're across Europe, we're actually doing better than a lot of European countries. Mm. But across Europe, we've made a mess of this. Looking at public health colleagues in Somalia. Now, Somalia is an amazing country with fantastic people, but they have no money. And they have 2 ventilators in the whole country. Mm-hmm. And they've managed to keep COVID largely out by very straight public health. Nigeria, much wealthier country, but still much poorer than Ireland. Very, very densely populated. Largely, they've kept COVID out. Uruguay and South America.
Yeah, what are they all doing that we didn't do?
Basic public health and taking it seriously.
And that's mask, wash your hands.
That's mask, wash your hands, but it's also contact tracing. It's also putting the resource... We don't have the resources in regional public health to do contact tracing properly. You know, you remember
surely
a few weeks ago...
they don't have the resources in Somalia or in Nigeria. It's much more advanced,
They do because they put the bodies in the ground. We didn't put the bodies in the ground. Do you remember the DIY, you know, go and contact trace yourselves message from HSE a couple of weeks ago? Mm. I mean, if you did that in Nigeria, the Nigerian Minister for Health would have you on toast for breakfast. They wouldn't tolerate that for a millisecond. So why do we tolerate it?
Okay, Peter Denny is in Africa. He's in Cairo, actually, in Egypt. Peter, good afternoon. Thanks for contacting us. What's your scenario? First of all, how is Egypt doing in the pandemic?
Very well, actually, but they've no idea why, to be honest. It appears to be that they had MERS and SARS years ago, so there appears to be, according to the medical professionals here, there appears to be some sort of herd immunity and a stronger immune system. I'm not a doctor, I have no idea, but it's not overwhelmed. There's always slight clandestine nature of the statistics, Joe, as you can imagine. I won't comment further, but no, it's not widespread, but there is good public health adherence, but no, it's not out of control at all.
Okay. And were you due to come home at Christmas, Peter, and your reaction?
Well, it was a plan, but I won't present myself as any braver than I am, but I was in tears the other day to listen to your show because of Leo Varadkar's comments. You know, I'm confused what is, you know, determined as essential. I don't know what a guideline is compared to a regulation or a law. I think anything said by a deputy prime minister inside the parliament is fairly close to government policy. So I don't think you have the right to utter sort of, you know, pub-based commentary, you know, almost Facebook level inside the Dáil, and then for hundreds of thousands of expats around the world, perplexed, standing confused. If people decide not to return to the country because they don't want to be a vector or patient zero, that's a great decision by them. But don't, as a deputy prime minister, a man who started off so well in Paddy's day when we were all rushed out of Cairo back to Ireland. We watched his press conference in Abu Dhabi Airport on the phone. The man was totally in control, commanded the entire nation, gave a wonderful, clear, strong advice. I know it was lockdown phase one, but now there seems to be sort of this sort of street commentary, which, you know, and has now entered the parliament, and he's uttering these comments, which are causing me the amount of pain that was caused around the world by people a lot further than where I'm standing from. People who haven't been hugged, kissed, touched, tapped on the back. I mean, these are all true for me, for example. And to go back to Ireland, I would self-isolate for 2 weeks, then do what? Spend a week with my family and then come back here and self-isolate for 2 weeks to protect the colleagues at work. I'm the only Westerner in the entire Arab business, which is fantastic for many, many reasons, but I don't want to be the introducer to their community either. So,
and had you,
Sorry,
Peter, I should be more conscious of the delay. Had you planned to come home, and who was at home here for you?
The whole plan, every night and every day, the whole plan was to come home to Ireland, and this was my sole focus. And I don't walk around miserable and crying every day, Joe, but, you know, I'm not at the peak of my emotional well-being, being alone here without Arabic, for example. It's a very difficult place to be. And there are no Westerners here because they all exited en masse last year with the eruption of this global crisis. But yes, I had planned to come home. I have family at home in Rathgar, Dublin. And I hadn't picked a date, but I was watching to see about PCR tests and which way it would, because it swings around, you know, it changes all the time, day after day. And, you know, because, you know, it was 48 hours and 72, it changes, you know, the efficacy of the test, etc. So, yes, I had planned. And this was the one thing in my mind that was guiding me towards all this. I wouldn't say misery, Joe. I don't want to sound like a miserable person. But, you know, when you're alone, you know, on your way on boarding school, which I never was, but, you know, you dream about the Easter holidays. Why? Because you get to go home, you get to, etc. And, you know, I'm 40 in January, which, you know, again, I won't see the Republic probably. So, no. So his comments whipped away any hope. But people who choose to go home, good luck to them. Or people who choose to stay away, that's entirely their own decision. But don't make a statement in the parliament that seems to have come from, you know, a night of 6:30 television, but now becomes de facto government policy. It's a bizarre way for a man who was a communications expert, a doctor by training, and a very good prime minister, no political allegiances, back in March, who now seems to have gone wayward and is offering these sort of pub-based Twitter nonsense in a public House of Representatives.
Well,
bizarre way. Well, I can't look at what a regulation compared to a law compared to a guideline is, Joe. Well,
bottom line, Peter, are you going to come home at Christmas?
I have no idea now. I'm perplexed. I'm confused. I don't know whether I will be welcome home. I was listening to your previous callers and last week, and now I get the impression that we'd almost arrive home and be, oh God, Peter from Cairo, watch out, be careful. It's I don't know. My family think probably best not to come home because I would be self-isolating, and how miserable would that be? And then I'd have to self-isolate here, and how miserable would that be? That's my mother's feeling on the matter. Like it would be 4 weeks of self-isolation. one thing wouldn't be too bad in Dublin. I'd have somebody to talk to, but I live alone here, so I don't speak Arabic.
We had a caller on from Dubai the other day, Patrick, I think his name, lovely man. But he was saying he hasn't physically met an Irish person in 9 months. Okay, I met
one 3 months ago by accident. But the Irish embassy is 20 metres from where I'm standing. It's closed. It's housed in the Netherlands embassy. It's closed. They're working from home. They're great people in the embassy. But they're not available for a handshake, nor should we be handshaking. But I haven't spoken English outside of the office in 4 months. I haven't hugged, shook hands, been tapped on the back, tapped somebody else on the back. I don't have a desire to be touching people on a daily basis, but it's once I leave the office daily at 5 o'clock, that's the end of the English show until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m.
But you say you don't speak Arabic.
No, I mean, that's my own issue, of course. But
well, can you understand it?
Not a chance.
Okay. So how do you communicate in your office day?
During the office day. My staff are contractually obliged to speak in English, which they do. Fantastic. And then I go home. I turn on yourself and others, and that's the evening. And I can order a coffee, Joe. Don't worry. I'm not dying of thirst.
How long are you out in Cairo, Peter?
I'm here since September 2019. I was in Kuwait before that. I'm well used to being an expat, Joe. I was in Dubai for many years. It's not about that. It's just about these bombshells of confusion that appear to be dropping from the sky.
Okay, I take that point. Okay, Peter.
Find yourself. Thanks, Joe.
Stay well, Peter. Yeah, that's Peter Denny in Cairo. 51551 wash hands. joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at RT.ie, Aisling Bannon. Aisling, good afternoon. You're in London. What's your situation, Aisling?
Hiya. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks.
So I'm over in London and I'm hoping to come home for Christmas. But it's just such a question mark at the moment. And obviously with the announcement last week, the guideline last week, it's even more confusing. I've been in hospital for the last year. Not coronavirus related. I have anorexia.
I have anorexia.
Before a few years ago.
So
my mum was coming over sort of monthly to kind of meet with my consultant and come for the reviews and things. But then obviously COVID hit and everything changed. Mm-hmm. At the end of October, start of November, my consultant and I agreed on a trial discharge to see how I get on. Because obviously, as you know, being in hospital too long is not beneficial. So that's where I'm at the moment. And obviously, really hoping to go home for Christmas. It's very tricky trying to navigate things on my own, having been in hospital for so long. And although there's outpatient support, that's also very different with the coronavirus. But it's really hard to know what to do, because I know that I kind of need family and friends right now. As I have for the last year, but haven't had that really opportunity because of being so far from them, and then obviously because of coronavirus as well. But it's just at the moment, it's hard to know what the right thing to do is, because I don't know whether I'm going to feel super guilty. I will feel guilty if I go home for Christmas and people are thinking she travelled and whatever else. I would envisage kind of having a swab before I go home. Because I don't think that would be a huge issue.
And who's with you in London at the moment, Aisling?
I'm on my own, which is quite hard, obviously, because I still kind of, my diagnosis is still kind of extreme anorexia. My BMI is quite low. I'm trying to navigate food myself. And I mean, like I said, we do have outpatient support, but it's all virtual at the moment. So aside from a weekly weigh-in, which is in person, obviously, our groups are online. And I am in a house share, but obviously they don't really know, and I'm not really going to have that conversation. So the plan was that Mum would come over as soon as I was discharged to help me with the transition. But then my dad had an accident. So although COVID was one factor, we were going to try and kind of, this was back in kind of September, October, we were going to try and kind of work around that. But then my dad had an accident and broke his pelvis. So going from a very active lifestyle to needing my mum kind of full time changed that as well. So obviously I'm desperate to see my parents. I'm desperate to see my sisters. Well, one of whom is in Australia, so I won't see her, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
Are you thinking, Aisling, that if you come home, which you dearly want to do, and I don't see how anyone would object in that. Surely they'd be saying, Aisling, you've just come out of hospital. You need your family. But are you saying if you come home that your anxiety levels will increase because you feel...
It's tricky because even upon discharge, there was a question of whether I would come straight home or whether I would try here. Because, I mean, realistically, everyone within my treatment team and my family know I don't cope on my own that well. And although I cope better than I once would have, it's still very, very difficult. And I find it very difficult to do the things that I need to do to look after myself, by myself, which makes me feel a bit pathetic anyway, but it's just the nature of the illness. So I don't think it would be guilt so much. I think it would be partially guilt, and definitely the guideline last week would have sort of maybe have brought up all of these posts even more so. But I mean, it's not like I'm going to be going to pubs. I'm definitely not going to be mixing with anyone.
Yeah, I take that aside point, too.
My family, I've got a very elderly grandmother who I wear my mask religiously. I can actually get an exemption from it, but I wouldn't. I wear the mask religiously. I don't come within contact of anybody. I'll stay away from even outdoors. And I know, you know, we essentially don't have to wear them on the street. But if I'm on the high street, I'm going to wear my mask. I'm extremely careful. I have been swabbed a few times. It's a really tricky situation. Guilt would be part of it, but I don't think it's probably founded guilt, realistically.
And how long were you in treatment in London for, Aisling?
Well, I've been in that. I've had the illness since I was kind of 12, 13. Yeah. So I've been in treatment in London this time around kind of 2 years. But inpatient, my recent inpatient admission was a year. And prior to that, was outpatient, I got home for Christmas last year just about, but there was a question mark over it. Thankfully, I did manage to get home, but I was hospitalised as soon as I got back. So it's quite tricky to know what the best thing to do is.
What does your mother think, or your parents?
My dad is like, of course you're coming home. Of course you're coming home. Sure, aren't you super safe? It's not like you're going to be mixing with people. I can imagine what you're like and kind of all this kind of thing. Because they know me so well and they know that I'm so cautious at the best of times. And even with my housemates, I tend to keep my distance. Even though we're within the same household, I still just, it's sort of, even though for the first lockdown, I was in hospital, so I didn't experience what it was like. And essentially, London is in lockdown at the moment. But from what I can gather, it's very different to the first one. But my parents want me to come home. Obviously, they won't have my sister Joanna home. My sister Nicole came home from Canada at the beginning of the virus, the beginning of the pandemic. And my other sister is married, but she lives in Ireland. So we're really hoping that we can kind of get together this Christmas. It has been a hard year for everyone in the world, without a doubt. Obviously, we've had a few, you know, additional kind of issues with my hospitalization again and my dad's accident, but like I'm sure everyone has, but it would be lovely to be able to spend that time together. I know my parents are worried because for the last year, although they always worry about me, and I know they always will, which I hate, but I can't really help that they're going to worry. At least for the last year, they've had the reassurance that I have been, you know, in hospital. They know that on a daily basis. It's more of a kind of a solo battle. That's not going to. Nothing's going to change, and the snap of a finger. But one thing I have come to realize is that something that helps so much is contact with people, especially loved ones. Even having the virtual support of the day patient team.
And why did you end up in London for treatment, Aisling?
Because in Ireland, I mean, we know what it's like. It's just, I've been in treatment in Ireland countless times, and it doesn't have the facilities that we need. I mean, I needed tube feeding. It's really complicated.
Yeah.
And Ireland obviously don't have the funds to the expertise, the it's hard to know.
Well, the beds is what people talk about. The inpatient treatment for anorexia nervosa is very, very reduced in Ireland. I don't know whether you were aware, Aisling, but that apparently the Crown, the new Netflix TV series, treats eating disorders, specifically bulimia, as encountered by Diana Spencer, Princess Diana. So maybe that'll lead to more conversations about eating disorders and in turn lead to more treatment facilities. Aisling, I wish you well and keep in touch. And I hope you are keeping in touch with your family and your clinicians on a daily basis, I hope. And it's good to hear that you're out of hospital, Aisling, and stay well and mind yourself.
Thanks so much, Joe.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. That's Aisling Bannon in London. 51551, Aisling.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Aisling Bannon was in London talking about her situation, unique situation, but not in that dilemma about to come home or not. Maeve McCarthy, Maeve, good afternoon. Your only child, Fiona, where is she at the moment?
Hi, Joe. My only child, Fiona, is in Austin, Texas. She actually went the day before the first case, that lady that went, or if, I don't know if it was a lady or a gentleman that went on the bus. Do you remember that?
Dublin Airport, yeah.
That news broke the evening after Fiona left. So you can just imagine the panic stations.
And where? What was she heading? Was it for business or leisure? Or
no, to work. She was going over for the year.
Wow.
And she was in great spirits heading off from Dublin Airport that morning. And, of course, I was trying to fight back the tears and trying to be the brave mom. But, of course, as soon as she left, then all hell broke loose. And I just, the floodgates opened. And I was just missing her so much. I cried all day that day. Wow. But little did I know what was coming down the tracks. So, it's been a really difficult time, Joe, especially heading off on her own, first time away from home. Luckily, she has met up some wonderful Irish people out there, some wonderful Cork people, Tipperary people. And my own background is Big Clare, but in this instance, I really have to hand it to the Cork and Tipperary people. So Clare for the hurling and Cork and Tipperary.
And for the friendship.
For the friendship.
And Maeve, do you speak to Fiona a lot?
Oh, regularly. We're in touch every day, Joe. Sure. Look, she's my only child. I'm absolutely heartbroken. And actually, today is her birthday.
Ah.
Fiona is 27 today, so it's kind of a double whammy today, really.
Well, you remember where you were 27 years ago today?
I most certainly do. I was in Mount Carmel Hospital, which is no longer in existence, and Fiona was actually a miracle baby. She had a lot of problems anyway, but she is literally a miracle baby, and Dr. Dockery delivered her at 1:15 on the 16th of the 11th, 1993. That was the day my little baby girl came into my life, and she's turned my world upside down in lots of wonderful ways. So she made the decision then about 2 weeks ago to not to come home for Christmas, but that was due to the fact that she didn't want to pass the virus on to myself or her dad, and obviously she didn't want to pass it on to anybody else or to the general public, so... it was one we had to accept.
And did you have what conversation did you have around that, Maeve?
Well, she rang and she just said, "Mom, I have something to tell you." And I didn't know what was coming. And she just said, "Look, I've made the decision that I'm not going to be home for Christmas." So it was extremely difficult. And I just said, "Look, love, I understand. And it's going to be really tough. And it's a tough decision you've had to make. And but I... no, I accept it. It's not going to be the same without you." She said, "It's going to be really tough for me too, Mom." And I said, "Look, love, I know, but we'll get through this and we will meet again." So, yeah, kind of that's the way it is, Joe.
What would she do on, where would she spend Christmas Day?
Well, I'm just hoping somebody will invite her for Christmas. Thanksgiving is next week, as you know. And so that Tipperary couple invited her for Thanksgiving.
Oh, brilliant.
I'm just hoping that she might get together with a few people for Christmas Day.
Yeah, I'm sure she will.
Yeah, yeah. But what keeps me going really is the fact that I know that so many people have lost loved ones to COVID, and my heart goes out to them. And my sincere sympathies to all those in this country and indeed all around the world who have lost loved ones and will never be, never sit around the Christmas table again. So that kind of, you know, that puts things into perspective, Joe, when you think about people flying and whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At the same time, I wouldn't like to judge anybody. We don't know people's circumstances, and none of us have the right to judge anybody who comes home to Ireland for Christmas this year. But I just hope they keep themselves and their loved ones safe.
What have you Maeve, on the whole debate in Ireland now is around pubs reopening, even though they close on Christmas Day, as it happened, and most of them say shut on St. Stephen's Day. But when you hear the debate around pubs, how do you react to that?
Given the sacrifice you're making. When I saw the scenes yesterday in Dublin, I just threw my hands up in despair. And yet at the same time, I understand that young people are young people and that they do what young people do, and that is to break rules and to, you know, to do what they shouldn't be doing. But at this during the pandemic, it's really not on, and they need to really, you know, get serious about it and to realise that they really won't have a Christmas if they don't stop this nonsense. And it's not just young people. There are plenty of older people that should know better, in fact. Young people have been absolutely terrific during this pandemic. You know, I really, really admire them. They have really suffered during this pandemic, but so too have the elderly as well. I have a 96-year-old uncle in a nursing home I visited yesterday, and I stood outside a window shouting into a phone while he tried to hear me. And it was really difficult. So, but again, I don't think we should be judging people. I think we just need to bring people along gently and to encourage them.
And ask people, to bear things in mind.
People.
Maeve, you remember to, I presume you're going to send stuff out for Christmas to Fiona.
Listen, already.
Good.
You have no idea the amount of stuff I sent out to her. He sent me a photograph of all the goodies that arrived for her birthday.
And what did you send out to her?
Well, I name products.
Yes, of course, yeah, absolutely.
Cadbury's chocolate, the chocolate in the States is the nicest.
Absolutely, and the reason why the Cadbury's chocolate is so nice is because of the Irish cows.
Butler's chocolate. In fact, I'm looking at some of them here now because these are ready for the Christmas box. And she loves squashies. They're the kind of things, really. Send her out some other few little bits and pieces, maybe a nice little furry toy or something.
Some surprises.
Exactly.
And get them into the post quick enough, because there's going to be some posts this year.
That's for sure, Joe. That's for sure. And listen, just today being her birthday, is there any chance you might be able to play something by Dermot Kennedy? If not today, maybe some other day.
We don't normally play music. Maeve, come to my house and just open the hall door. 24/7 in our house is Dermot Kennedy.
Yeah, she absolutely loves
Dermot. We could be giants. That's all I hear. I love him. I love him myself.
So do I.
And my three children, they display tickets. They went to see Dermot Kennedy when he was on in the Working Man's Club about 7 years ago
for
10 shillings. So they love him, and your daughter and everyone loves him. He's brilliant.
He's brilliant.
And I'd say that's the other thing people miss now. I know there's much more access to music now, but when you think of all the brilliant Irish bands, I'm thinking of Codaline, the Coronas, Picture This, DC Font, just incredible. Dermot, all the incredible artists, and I know that Niall Horan, they're doing their best. If you do a duet with me on We Could Be Giants, Maeve, we'd get there, you know. We'd for Fiona on her birthday.
Well, I'd certainly pass it on, Joe.
Okay, well, what is she working at over there?
She works for Dell.
Yeah.
Odell, brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And does she like it?
She does, actually. She does. Yeah. She loves work. It's just, you know, every so often it's a bit lonely, obviously. And the Irish are terrific. The Irish abroad are just so wonderful. And as I say, particularly the Tip and the Cork people, even though it galls me to say it. Sorry.
Oh, no, they're brilliant. They're brilliant. Yeah. They're brilliant. Here's Dermot Kennedy. Give us a minute of Dermot.
No, you...
We used to be giants. When did we stop? Just say the word and I'll be yours. You know I never forgot.
This is for you, Fiona.
The hope and the hurt has lived inside of me. But there's gold in the dirt I never took the time to see. But I knew of its worth when you walked beside of me. And my hand fit in yours like a bird would find. We used to be giants. When did we stop? Say the word and I'll be heard. You know I never forgot we were the song in the silence.
Now when I got home today, Maeve might, well, she'd be home late because she's a teacher, but she'd kill me for getting the word wrong there. Okay, Fiona, but you say happy birthday to your darling daughter. You go back, take me back 27 years, Maeve. We're in Mount Carmel. Fiona, she's an hour and a half old at this stage, is she?
That's correct. She was born at 1:15 on the 16th, 11/1993.
Well, put her...
When she was born, I just said, welcome to the world, Fiona. I love you to bits. And I love you more than ever, Fiona, sweetheart. And I hope you have a happy birthday, darling. Dad and myself send all our love and best wishes to you. And we hopefully will see you soon. And that you keep safe and well. So thank you.
Just say the word and I'll be yours. You know I never forgot.
The hope and the hurt. The hope and the heart, Maeve. You are giants yourself, Maeve and Fiona. Look after each other. Distance will never dim your love. Will never dim your love, Maeve.
Thank you so much for everything, Joe. Love the show. Take care of yourself. And
you too, Pat.
You and to all your listeners. Likewise. Take care.
Mind yourself,
Maeve. We used to be giants. When did we stop? Song in the silence, but time catches up. Just say the word and I'll be yours. You know I never forgot. I knew from the start you'd be the one to set me free.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Joe at RT.ie. Shauna Dunn is in the UK. Again, your dilemma, Shauna.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good to be on. So I'm here in Chester in the UK. So I suppose like every other one of your callers or their loved ones talking about their children or family members to get back, it's that really moral dilemma of wanting to get back and see your family, to give them the hugs, especially around Christmas time, and, you know, sharing that joy and love. But at the same time, not wanting to bring back the virus and infecting or hurting people. So it's that mild dilemma. Now, we normally, where we're based, we normally get the ferry back, so we'd be quite contained anyway. So, you know, we'd be in our own cars, have our own masks, you know, follow all the guidance. And when you're in the ferry, you can book your cabin. So, you know, you've kind of got those isolated spots, so you're not mingling or mixing in with anybody unnecessarily. But again, it's really just holding to see whether we can do that or not. Now, I haven't made a concrete decision, like some of your callers, on which way to go. I know probably your family and friends listening, hoping I say one thing. But you don't want to hurt anybody, but at the same time, you just want to catch up with your family. Like, I've seen Mum once or twice this year and Dad once, so it's a very long time to go without seeing family physically. And I know we're all putting up with these consequences and dilemmas and, you know, the guidance and trying to support and keep each other healthy, but sometimes it's that emotional well-being that you compromise in order to keep everybody physically or physiologically safe and well.
Yeah. And have you worked out the cost, Shona, with PCR tests, if they're available?
Yeah. So when Leo last week announced about, you know, the airports are going to be back open, but getting the PCR costs at approximately 150 euros to 200 euros. Now, we normally pay the guts of... We normally get the boat, because we get the boat quite often now, so we normally get kind of discounts and stuff, but you have to be like, you know, the early bookers. I know you had people on before saying they've booked them in advance to get the good prices and that. But we are probably looking at the guts of 1,000 euros to get back, you know, 500 euros return on the ferry. And then if we're doing a PCR test at 200 quid each, the guts of 1,000 euro before your fuel. And obviously Christmas is an expensive time. Anyway, and, you know, we don't put a price on trying to travel back and see people, but you have to kind of look at it, especially, you know, my other half, he lost his job due to the situation this year. Thankfully, he's back working now. So, but that's another thing you have to weigh up. Can it be afforded when we have to get the test? And obviously, you want to get the test because you want to keep everybody safe and well. But yeah, it's such a moral dilemma, Joe. It really is.
And then, the good news today, but I see the Moderna vaccine, they're saying, won't be available even in the States until spring, even though they say the results are better than they had dared to imagine. And then we've the Pfizer vaccine, hopefully available earlier, but again, two different delivery methods and two different transportation methods and storage methods in terms of temperatures. Doesn't look like it, but maybe things will change quicker than we thought coming up to Christmas. But are you of the, Shona, are you of the view like Christmas is one day and let's try and bite the bullet this year, and please God, it'll be for a bigger, the sacrifice will be for a bigger prize later on.
I totally get that, and I think that's the hard thing, because you see two sides of the coin. You know, you want to get back and see everybody, but at the same time you want people to be well. But then on the other side, you know, it is one festive time of year. Now, our situation, now we got married nearly this time last year, 28th of November last year in Sligo. So we missed Christmas in Ireland last year for going on honeymoon. So we were thinking of banking, I'll be back with the fam this year now and have the Irish Christmas and that. So in a selfish way, I feel like we may miss out on a second Irish Christmas, which is like no other, let's be honest. But at the same time, yes, I totally get that. The one sense of, you know, it's only one Christmas, but, you know, it's not just the day, it's the time of the year, it's the festivities, it's the gathering. Like, I have cousins all over the world and we always get back and come and see each other. My grandmother is 86 and you know, she's in wonderful and we want to go and see her, but at the same time we don't want to infect her. But sometimes just standing there seeing someone from their garden helps, just to bridge that bit of emotional pull. But thankfully, you know, for in her situation, she's very tech savvy, she's on FaceTime and calling us and everything.
That makes such a difference. Shona, let's see what moves or develops in the next few weeks. That's Shona Dunn in the UK. Ray Hennessy is in Cork. Ray, you're living on your own. Where are your children? Because you mentioned them here.
Hi, Joe. My eldest daughter lives in France since 1991. And my second daughter is in Dubai for the past 7 years.
Okay.
But been away a lot longer than that. And I normally go to Dubai in November and France for Christmas for the last 20 odd years. And I won't be travelling this year.
Okay.
And they won't be travelling either. So it's.
And where will you spend Christmas, Ray?
I have lots of invitations, but I haven't accepted any so far.
Okay.
It's just.
Is it just yourself at home now?
Just myself. Yeah, I'm widowed. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's going to be very strange. But the lockdown has been very strange anyway. Yeah. And I suppose I'm used to being totally on my own the last number of months. And but you know, Christmas is such a special time. You would look forward, but there's nothing to look forward to this year, really, you know.
And Ray, what do you think of the whole debate about the pubs? I know your fellow Corkonian there, our Taoiseach Micheál Martin, was talking to Neil Prendeville this morning. And he was saying he's really annoyed at this takeaway point phenomenon and the way it's unfolded. There's one thing about off licences, but this phenomenon of pub selling pints, which you're supposed to take away. But
I know, it's crazy. It's crazy. You see, the problem is, in this country anyway, I feel that there's loads of people, a very high percentage of people, doing everything right, but then there's the percentage that are couldn't care less, and they think they're immune from the whole thing, and that it doesn't apply to them. And unfortunately, that's where we are. It's sad.
Yeah. Okay, but Ray,
you're doing your bit for the lot of us anyway.
No, it's the likes of you
that's
doing.
Thank you so much.
It's the likes of you that's doing your bit, Ray, but I still detect a little after note of sadness in your voice there.
There is. But you're listening to my grandson's birthday today, and I won't be seeing him. I'll FaceTime him later on.
What's his name? Yeah. If you want to tell me,
Aaron Aubrey. He's French.
And what age is he today?
He's 11 today.
Oh, good man. Happy birthday, bon fête, and all.
Thank you so much, okay. Joe.
Okay. Ray, thanks indeed. That's Ray Hennessy in Cork, Douglas in Cork. Mary Conway is in Wicklow.
Hello, Joe.
What are you going to do, Mary?
Well, I'm going to go out to my eldest son and his wife for Christmas Day, and then Stephen's Day I'll go to my younger son and his wife and my grandchildren for Stephen's Day, and then I'm back on my own again.
And they know you're coming. This is you haven't just made the announcement to them now, have you?
No.
You have an invite. Okay.
Now, it's a standing thing.
And
I normally go over to my girls.
Right.
A lot of Christmases. But the three of them, they live in different places. One is in Brewster. The other is in Martha's Vineyard. And the other is in Newport.
All in the US of A.
All in the US of A. Long before my husband passed away 31 years ago.
Okay, so you won't see... When was the last time you saw them?
Last Christmas, thank God. Okay. And they wanted me to stay. But I had a feeling something was going to go wrong. And I wouldn't stay, and I came home. Thank God I did.
And what was your feeling that something was going to go
wrong? My feeling was, I don't know. I just had a feeling something was going to happen.
Well, you might have told us. You might have warned us, Mary.
I can be quite perceptive at times, Joe, but I'm sorry.
And you say, okay, Christmas Day, St. Stephen's Day, and then you're back cocooning on your own. What does that mean?
Well, I stay in. I've been cocooning since March, and my children did the shopping for me, especially Paula, my lovely daughter-in-law, and my lovely daughter-in-law Sue, which I'm very lucky to have two daughter-in-laws like them. And then I decided I can't be a burden on them, and I'll have to go out. And so I go out once a week and I do the shopping.
Well done. And what's been the hardest part about cocooning?
The hardest part is not being able to hug my children.
Okay.
And my grandchildren. And my advice to anybody is I'm living on my own for 30 years.
Yeah.
And I honestly take each day as it comes. And it has helped me tremendously.
That's fantastic. And you're still very young. You're only, 6 years older than Joe Biden? 7 years older.
Thanks, Joe.
You're very young.
I know. Let's put it this way. I'm young at heart.
Yeah.
And that keeps me going as well. But I also get very down.
Yeah.
You know, you put on a face and but it's very difficult. I used to play bridge. Yeah. And I used to love the the social aspect of it.
Of course, yeah.
And I missed that. And I haven't even seen one member since I've been cocooning.
Wow.
You know?
So you've been very diligent and very vigilant.
Very vigilant. And I think it's dreadful the way an awful lot of people completely ignore what's being told. There we have wonderful Professor Luke O'Neill. We have the other doctor on RTE every evening, which is fantastic. The NHS has placed great advertisements in the paper.
Yeah.
And still you get the...
And what do you think then, Mary, finally, of the argument about reopen the pubs and reopen the...
I think the pubs should close.
Yeah.
I think the grocery stores should not be allowed to sell any drink whatsoever, because it seems to be the main issue that drink brings people together. They lose their inhibitions and they just don't care.
Okay, let's see how it goes over the next few weeks, Mary. But you're an example to everybody. You really are. Well done.
Thanks, but I rely on, and I'm not over religious, believe you me, but I rely on God a lot, and He's been very good to me.
And when you say you get down, what do you do when you get a little bit downhearted?
I just think too much, Joe.
You think too much?
Think too much.
No, nothing wrong with that.
And like, you miss your family, you know, and you miss, the most thing I miss is hugs.
Okay, and that's what you, what do you want from Santa?
A hug.
Okay.
There'll be no hugging Joe yet.
Okay, please go.
It's only
Mary.
A couple of months.
Yeah, okay.
Let's all get together, stay together, and have the one good outlook. Just think of today and forget about tomorrow, and let's hope that things will come together in the future.
Well said.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Remember last week when Leo Varadkar announced effectively that people shouldn't come home for Christmas. Christmas travel was not essential. He mentioned the 1967 decree, was it, that people shouldn't come home because of foot and mouth. Now, Stephen, good afternoon. You broke the rules in 1967.
That's right, Joe, yeah, that's right. Leo Varadkar should have been in the courthouse in Belmonte in January 68, and he would have seen for himself all the people that came home and for that Christmas.
Because he, the tarnisher said most, a lot of people seem to abide by the... But you did come home, and why did you end up in court?
Loads of people came home that time for Christmas, you know, back in the 60s, late 60s or whatever. Because there was so much fun around locally that time. You could go to a dance every night.
What was the penalty when you... How were you caught?
I don't know. The guards found out about all the people that had come home. Like, you know, I suppose word of mouth.
So were you up in court?
Oh, yeah.
Were you found guilty of coming home?
Well, you see, I had come from London, and it was very hard to come face to face with a cow in London, especially the four-legged ones. So when I was summoned to court, the judge, most of the people that came home were coming from cities anyway.
And what was that? Did anyone get sent to prison?
Nobody got sent to prison. But what he was doing, I'd say he was issuing a fine to about every third person that came up before him in the court.
And what was the penalty?
I don't remember. Probably £5 or £10 at the time is what it was.
But like, you think a lot of people broke that 1967 foot and mouth edict. Okay, thanks indeed, Stephen. I'm over time, unfortunately. Today's programme, the series producer is Rebecca Meehan, and Ray Darcy is next.